Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Joe Fairless to the show. He is an investor who has an amazing story about how he moved from 4 single-family homes to doing his first big apartment deal, which is 168 units. And I think you'll be very anxious to hear this. And he's also got some other deals going, which are very exciting as well. And he's coming to us from New York City today. Hey, Joe, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Jason. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. And by the way, you do a great job on your show, which is about the best real estate investing advice ever. Let's hear your story. I mean, it's really a pretty amazing story because you just took quite literally, Joe, a leap. You know, you didn't do what most people do, which is this sort of iterative approach where you have a few single family homes, then you have a couple dozen and you do your first apartment deal. And, you know, you took a pretty big jump, right?
Yeah. And yeah, that's how I approach things. I found that I might not take the typical path that others have done. My whole approach with anything really, and I'll get specific in a second, but with anything is to find out who's successfully done what I've done, model after their success, have people along the way who are advising me, who have successfully done and are successfully doing what I want to do, and then simply follow that same path and get the same results or similar results. So my background is I was in advertising, working in an advertising agency in New York City. I was the youngest vice president of a New York City ad agency. I was 29 years old and had climbed the ladder. The only other place for me to go was president, and I didn't want to do that. It wasn't fulfilling anymore. While I was in advertising, I invested in single-family homes, and I had 4 homes in Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. Was born in Flint, Michigan, from Fort Worth, and now live in New York City, so kind of did a little triangle there.
Yeah, that is quite a that's quite a mix.
Yeah, very, very much so. Big old mix. And now, you know, so I was in advertising, and I wasn't feeling what I was doing anymore. Wasn't growing, wasn't learning, and I saw an opportunity to learn commercial real estate, specifically multifamily. I reached out to some people who were successfully doing it, learned from them, and then I decided to leave my job. Well, when I left my job, I realized that, and I knew this before I left, but one of the disadvantages / secret advantage is that I couldn't get approved for a mortgage. So that necessitated me to bring in investors and raise money for my first deal. So that's how I, you know, made the transition from advertising to single family to then, you know, looking at a large multifamily.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you raised money for which deal? The first single family home deal?
Oh, no. So I raised money for the multifamily. The single family homes I bought with my own money in different ways. The first one, I put 20% down of my own money. The second one, I put 10% down with a HomePath loan, which HomePath is going away, I read recently. The third, I bought all cash, but then I did a cash out refinance and it appraised for more than what I purchased it for and essentially got all my money back out. And then the fourth one I bought with a line of credit, personal line of credit. And then for the multifamily, I started, you know, looking at different, you know, different properties. I thought conservatively I could raise $100,000. And perhaps aggressively, I could raise up to $300,000. So I was looking at around the $1 million price point, and I was gonna grow into that deal. And the more I looked, and that's about the market I was looking at, which is Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's about a 30 unit. And I kept looking, and then after about 4 months of evaluating properties, I came across this 168 unit. That one of my team members showed me, and it was in Cincinnati. But the challenge was that it was $6.35 million. And that was nowhere close to the $82,000 home that I'd purchased before. And so there was a mental leap that I had to take. Initially, it was presented to me that I would only need to raise about $500,000. So it wasn't that much of a leap from what I thought I could raise, but then the deal changed, and eventually I had to raise $1.3 million for the deal, and ended up acquiring it by raising money with investors.
Okay, so take us through that deal. What was the total purchase price?
$6.35 million.
Okay, and how did you structure the financing? Just give us the whole breakdown. You raised X, and then you financed it. You know, what's the whole thing?
So we got it through a master lease with option to purchase. The reason why we did a master lease is because it has a large prepayment penalty on it. It's called, as you know, defeasance. And it was cost prohibitive to the seller or us to put new debt on it because of that large prepayment penalty. But the seller wanted out and we wanted in. And so what we did is we structured it where we gave them a down payment of $1.3 million, agreed on his purchase price of $6.35 million, did a master lease with option to purchase for 4 years. After the 4 years is up, the defeasance penalty is going away. At that point, we'll put new debt on it, or you know, we can sell the property, whatever. We have a couple different options.
Okay, so with the master lease, that's really interesting. So you basically got around the prepayment penalty, and this is an interesting discussion because I've got a 125 unit apartment complex that I'm working on selling with my partners now. You know, that one's got a big prepayment penalty, and if we do a deal on that, we're going to pay like $400,000 prepayment penalty or some insane amount like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here I'm getting an idea from you, you know. So how did you structure the lease terms and price? I mean, you know, that's such a sort of a subjective, it's pretty hard to do on a property like that. You certainly don't have comps.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, it's kind of like evaluating as though you're buying it, and the master lease payment that we make to the seller is equal to the mortgage payment. We actually pay the lender directly. We got written approval from the lender prior to entering into this agreement that they were fine with us.
Because you were afraid they'd call a due on sale and say that you got to pay the prepayment penalty right then, right?
Absolutely. We were afraid not only that, but in the loan document, it states that the the seller, who has the loan with the lender, cannot enter into a master lease agreement without written approval. So if we had given the seller $1.3 million, we might not have a way of getting that $1.3 million back if the lender says, well, you entered into, you know, a false agreement.
Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised that they wrote you a letter and said it was okay. That's pretty surprising, right?
Well, I don't know if it's surprising or not. I know that from the lender's perspective, they have worked with this seller before. So they want to keep his business, number one. And number two, there's little increased risk to them because the person who was originally on the hook is still on the hook. That the seller is still personally guaranteeing that we, my group, will pay the mortgage. And so none of their original documents have changed. We've just got, you know, somebody else who is operating the property. So then it becomes a matter of who's operating the property. And they wanted to make sure that we had a reputable and experienced third-party property management company in place. And once they knew that we did and we got written confirmation, or proof rather, that that's who's going to be managing the property, they were fine with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. Okay. So tell us more. Take us through the rest of the deal. Did you finish all of the structuring on exactly how that all that worked, or
yeah,
is there more to tell on that? Okay.
I think that's the gist of it,
right,
for
okay.
structuring it.
How did you find the property?
I found the property through a consultant that I had hired, and he was helping me learn the business. And in addition to learning the business, he's also a broker. And he came across this property through one of his connections/friends, and they presented it to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fantastic. Okay, so what happened next?
Well, at that point, I needed to raise a whole lot of money.
How long were you able to tie the property up for in order to raise money?
It took about 2 months, I'd say. I'd say it took 2 months. I at that point, I immediately drew a thermometer on a piece of paper, and I put $1.3 million at the very top, and started filling it up. My approach to raising money is something I kind of fell into. You know, I'd never raised a penny before, but from my marketing and advertising background, I've done a lot of different campaigns that were quantifiably focused. And so what I did is I approached it as though I had a goal for any type of marketing or advertising campaign, and we had to get a certain number of downloads or a certain number of signups. And I know that one of the specialties whenever I was in marketing and advertising is word of mouth. And I've written some chapters in word of mouth books. And so I know that if you get one person from a network on board, then that person will likely talk to others. And more importantly, other people in that network will be more likely to be interested and consequently invest if it makes sense to them. So what I mean by that is I created a spreadsheet. And in the spreadsheet, on each column, I had each network that I'm a part of. So I'm on the Alumni Advisory Board at Texas Tech. I listed that as a network. I'm on a flag football team. I'm the captain of a flag football team. I listed that as a network. Advertising, Dallas, oil, gas, all the different industries that I'm a part of, or all the different networks I'm a part of. And then my goal, after writing down the names of people I know in each of those networks, was to get just one person. Because once I got just one person in each of the networks, it was a lot easier to have a conversation with the remaining members of the network and say, so-and-so is investing, and I'd love to share this opportunity with you as well.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, good. So who was your first – so, okay, you had to create your documents and so forth, and tell us a little bit about that. You know, how did that all work?
The documents, my mom is a paralegal, and she used to work for an attorney in Fort Worth called, his name's Ed Cox. He has his own law firm. So he was a family friend, someone who I trust implicitly. And he was helping, he was the one working with me on creating, all the necessary documents.
So you created a private placement memorandum. How much did you raise from your first person?
First person that said he was going to invest initially said $250,000. I got thrown a bit of a curveball on that about a month before we were supposed to close, and that it went from $250,000 to $125,000 to $50,000. And I ended up, that's one of the lessons learned on my end. I now know that I need to raise 30% more than what I think I need, and be completely transparent with the people who are in that 30% category and just tell them, hey, you're on deck. If something were to change, then you'll be in the deal. And that's a lot easier conversation to have than to be caught flat-footed and need to raise money from scratch like I had to in this scenario. So the first person ended up investing $50,000. But if it weren't for his initial commitment to me and of the $250,000 what I thought he was going to invest, then it would have been psychologically a lot more challenging and tactically to raise the money because of the extreme amount of difference that I had to make up.
So that's no surprise that you had those pitfalls, and I'm sure everybody who's raised money has experienced the broken promises like that. So 30% is your target. What did you do to network into the rest of the group? Once you got one person on board.
Well, what I do is I first off, I have to wholeheartedly believe in the opportunity. I have to believe that this is one heck of an opportunity for people to make money in a way that is not available in other places to them at this moment. If I wholeheartedly believe that, and I did, and I do on my next deal, then I know that it's just a matter of telling enough people about a good opportunity, and eventually you'll have enough people wanting to participate. So what I did specifically is I would email out something saying, "Hey, I'd love to tell you about a deal that I'm closing on with investors. Here's how much I've raised so far. There's only X amount remaining. Would you like me to share with you some more information on it and set up some time to discuss?" And then if they say yes, then I will send them the presentation. I will give them a couple days to review. That way, going into the call, the majority of them have already said, "Yes, I'm interested," and reviewed the presentation. That way we're not having a conversation from the starting line. It's rather just speaking about some other things that they might have questions about with the deal. And then in that same email that I mentioned originally to them, it also says so-and-so is also either investing or interested in the deal, just to throw, just to tie that back to the networking advice that I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. And had these people had any interest in investing in, a syndicated real estate deal or any experience in that before? Or did you probably didn't know? Or, what were your assumptions about that?
Yeah, I would say the majority of them had not. One of them had. And the other was simultaneously about to invest in another one. It was a different conversation than it wasn't just a conversation about the deal. It was about multifamily, the benefits of investing in real estate in general. And then we got to the specific deal parameters. I'd say half of them had been investors on their own though. For real estate, so they knew about it, and then I'd say the other half hadn't, but they had been successful in their careers and in the stock market and other investments. So they had an investor mentality. And that's what that allowed me to, you know, cater the conversation to, you know, whatever we needed to, for that particular investor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good, good. All right. You tied that property up for what, 2 months, right? And that was on a due diligence or kind of free look period, right?
Yeah, we actually...
And that's when you went out and raised the money.
Yeah, it was interesting. I knew because of the relationship, and I wouldn't recommend this, but because of the relationship that my consultant had with the broker and the broker had with the seller, and because of the unique structure of the deal, and because the seller, quite frankly, couldn't sell the property without this unique structure because of the $1 million prepayment penalty, we started speaking. I started speaking to investors before we officially had it under contract, just because, you know, it was my first deal. I wanted to make sure I could actually pull through on closing on it before I put it under contract. So I would say we tied it up for 2 months, but I'd say 3 months, maybe 3.5 months is whenever I had the first conversations to investors about it.
Mm-hmm. Did you have anybody else helping you raise the money? Did you hire anybody or put someone on a commission? And, you know, I know there are probably some securities laws about that, but, you know, any like affiliates helping you, or did you do it all yourself?
I worked with the brokers, and they put in their commission into the deal to be 25% owners of it. So they put in about $350,000 plus or minus. I'm forgetting the exact amount. So I raised the remaining amount.
What else would you like people to know about, you know, maybe the deal itself? You know, why did you like this deal? How did you, you know, manage the deal, and how's it going now? We talked a lot about the raising money part, and I wanted to do that, Joe, just because so many people wonder, where does the money come from? What I do want to say to the listeners is a good deal attracts money. The hardest part is finding the good deal and then, you know, getting some control of the good deal for enough time so that you can raise the money. The other part of that really is dealing with the seller. How did you develop that credibility on that side, you know, that they would want to tie up their property? And I know that you didn't tie it up right away, as you mentioned. How did they know you were going to come through and make this happen? I mean, you're a 29-year-old guy who's never raised money before and, you know, was only a single-family home investor before that. And, you know, I mean, how did they believe in you? You know, you had to get them to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's the one aspect that I completely was unaware of that is critically important with multifamily, and that's credibility. I was blown away by how important credibility is, as far as how many properties you've closed on before, how many you manage, if you've bought this particular type of real estate asset. I didn't know that was going to be so important. And fortunately, how I was able to pull up my chair at the big kids table is by having other people around me who had done those types of deals before. You know, I had a consultant, I had a property management company, and I had the money from, at least I was claiming I had the money from investors, and then it just kind of, it happened, but I knew it would happen.
I mean, a lot of sellers would ask for proof of funds. That's a reasonable request.
Yeah, and I didn't have it. I didn't have proof of funds, and I wasn't asked to present it. Now, if I'm asked for proof of funds, I can show that and then some, because I've got the track record, and I've got the people on my team and the investors who have that. But previously, I didn't have a proof of funds, and but you know what? If they had asked for it, I would have found a way. I know I would have found a way, so that wouldn't have been a stopping point for me. So as far as other things I'd like to mention about the deal and why I thought it was a good opportunity. Well, it was a classic repositioning, in that the seller was wanting to develop. He was more interested in develop than management, and he is an amazing developer, and he wanted to get out of this management of the property Right now it was, or at the time, it was family managed, and we saw opportunities to optimize management and then also increase rents without doing significant improvements to the property. We just saw that there were some opportunities to bring the rents up just by updating the landscaping a bit and having some better processes in place for the resident communication and that type of thing. We had a motivated seller, and we had a seller who was challenged because he couldn't sell the traditional route. And on the flip side, with me and my group, we had never, since it's a company I created from scratch, we had never managed a property, and we didn't have the track record in multifamily. So the best way for us to get in and get that track record was to go in under a master lease, because we don't have to go through the rigorous approval process of a lender. Even though they approved us, they didn't go through our financials like they would if we were the ones on hook for the loan. But at the same time, now we're going to get the credit for managing this property for 4+ years, and then we're going to build our track record and our experience, and that's going to help with the next deal.
Yeah, okay. So when do you think you'll do your next deal? Or I mean, well, you're working on a deal now, but I know you can't talk a lot about that. I want to just let you answer that question however you like to. So, sorry if I put you
Yeah,
on the spot
sure.
there.
No, I'm put on the spot all the
Okay.
time. I can work
All right, go
it.
for it.
I've been working on my next deal for the last 5 months. It's an off-market deal, so as you mentioned, I can't say a whole lot about it. All I can say is that it is a large development, multifamily development opportunity that I'm going to be doing. And the reason why is because I want to continually evolve as a person and as a professional, and I want to continue to learn and grow. And I feel like I'm getting one heck of a learning experience with the 168 unit repositioning. And it's not that I am burnt out by the repositioning. I actually really enjoy it, but I want a different type of challenge. And ground up development certainly is how I'm able to do that, because I've never developed before and I will need to raise a lot of money to make the deal happen, is I'm partnering with an experienced developer. And he'll lead the charge on the development, and I'll work with him as more of the ex you know the person who executes on the ground, and I'll learn that way. I think that's a much better way of learning development to actually get paid than going to school for 4 years or 6 years or whatever and paying someone to teach me. Rather, yeah, I'm being paid to learn, building my net worth and helping out investors who will be presented a good opportunity.
Just any other tips you want to close with, Joe? I mean, any other thoughts you have on any part of the real estate investing world and, why you like it, what you think about it, whatever. I just wanted to leave it open for you.
Yeah, I think real estate, being successful in real estate, it has three parts to it. One is creativity. Finding there that there's any structure that you pass on the street is an opportunity. It's just a matter of, can you structure the deal? Can you think of a way to structure the deal so that it makes sense for both parties? And the 168 units is a prime example of creativity. The second is leverage. So really leveraging both time, with having people who have been there, done that, help you learn the process. That has allowed me to be exponentially farther than I would be if I didn't do that. And then also, obviously, leverage money. And with real estate, I'm a huge fan of not over leveraging, but leveraging intelligently. And then lastly, relationships, the third part. I wholeheartedly believe that the foundation of business, not only real estate, is relationships. And my number one relationship advice from a professional standpoint is to always give before you ask for anything from someone. I am a proponent of always offering to give someone something before I ask them for anything. And if that mentality is present in all of your professional dealings, it's incredible how much you'll stand out from everybody else, and how fulfilling it is to help others get what they want before you get anything that you want.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. You know, I had Harvey McKay on the show before, and he's got all these creative, great book titles. And, you know, my favorite one is called Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty.
Yeah.
And so that's a great book title. And, you know, so good. That's a good philosophy. The famous, the late great Zig Ziglar, he used to say, you can have everything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want. And you know, that's so true. The world is an abundant place. It's all out there. You just got to learn how to create enough value, you know, and put that value out there first. And then it will be no problem to get it in return and get people interested in all the stuff you're doing. So that's a great philosophy, Joe, and we appreciate you sharing it with us. Give the listeners your website and tell them where they can learn more about you and your work.
You can check me out at my podcast is called Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever. And you can see that at joefairless.com/show, S-H-O-W.
Good stuff. Joe Fairless, thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Here's your chance to catch up on all of those Creating Wealth shows that you've missed. There's a 3-book set with shows 1 through 60, all digital download. You save $94 by buying this 3-book set. Go ahead and get these advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.